Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
All right, let's talk to John Beeson. John's a former NFL linebacker, now working for CBS Sports. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us. So let's get to this Thomas Davis suspension. What did you think of that hit, and did you think that two games suspended was a justice in that particular case?
Well, I think you know, it's simple. We're talking about children. When you discipline somebody, you just want it to be fair. You know, I have a sibling. You want it to kind of look the same. I'd say, first off, I think, you know, Thomas' personality, who he is, how he plays, the person he is, man of the year, I think we know that he's not a dirty player. I'd say that, first off, he is old school. He's been around for a long time. The game has changed. But I know that he was fined close to $50,000 earlier for a crackback hit. In my personal opinion, I think that he's trying to take his helmet out. I think he is trying to lead with his shoulder pad. But, I mean, he's a hitter. That's the game. I think he immediately felt bad about it. And I think everyone's in uproar because of what happened with Rob Gronkowski. I mean, to me, as long as I've been around the game, and I don't anticipate seeing something as egregious as what happened with Rob, for him to get one game is mind-boggling to me. I don't know, maybe it has something to do with the primetime game against the Steelers. I have no idea, but I will tell you this. This is clear cut. This is not fair, and this is what the league has been. They do a horrible job of, you know, dishing out punishment, and, you know, something needs to happen. And at the end of the day, this is a football move, and what Robert did was gutless. It was cowardless. It was bad. It was that bad, and I know that that's the reaction from players, because someone pulls your jersey, you got frustrated because you get held every play. I mean, I don't understand. So that's the way I see it. I know that, you know, it's going to be reduced to one game because of it, but it's not on par. It's not even close.
We're all in accord as far as Rod Gronkowski and the punishment that was meted out. That definitely wasn't severe enough. So I'm with you there. Now, you just transitioned out of the game a couple years ago. How difficult was it for you? Because all these rules that are in place now, and the league being proactive about taking the headshots out of the game, and as I stated earlier, hey, we're conditioned to go and try to inflict pain on your opponent. How difficult would it be for you now to adjust how you played under these current rules?
Well, it's one of those things where you're saying to yourself, like, at some point, somebody's got to be smart enough and say that the changes in the rules are actually making the game more dangerous. And I'll say this. You know, we had this big push in Little League football called heads-up football. And that's true. That's exactly how it's taught. Heads-up means see what you hit. Okay? Now, if the spine is perfectly aligned, right, like when we squat, right, when we squat, your spine's perfectly aligned. We can put a lot of weight on our back if we're strong enough. You squat, boom, you rack it. But we don't squat from our head up. I mean, we start at our shoulders. So once you start to turn your head, I mean, taking your head out of football, don't lead with your helmet, use your shoulder. Now your spine is actually curved. And even when you lift weights, if you look down when you squat, you're gonna hurt yourself. If you look to the right, you're gonna hurt yourself. So if your spine is perfectly aligned and you see what you hit, in the case of Ryan Shazier, it's two things that he did wrong. First off, he was trying to lower his target, so he didn't see what he hit. Because I know that on a crossing route versus cover three, it's a kill shot for a linebacker. Mm-hmm. It is a kill shot. And he lunged because he wasn't trying to hit him too hard, as opposed to running through the tackle. And finally, somebody said it. Coach Gruden last night during the Monday night game said, hey, you know what? They need to start finding some of these quarterbacks, because the bang eights, those seam routes, those crossing routes in cover three, those swing routes, I'm sorry, in cover two, you don't throw those because you're going to get your guy killed. You're going to get killed. When they started to change the rules, guys would roll around, literally roll around, get the flag because they look like they're hurt, and then they get up, and then they would, on offense, they would high-five each other because they got a 15-yard penalty. Like, yeah, okay, we got a first down. It became that. And now, today, I'm just saying more defensive guys are going to get hurt because they're putting their spine in a position that it's going to cause more injury. Heads-up football is the way you play. You lead with your helmet. You stay aligned, and that's the game.
Gio and Jones and John Beeson across the country on CBS Sports Radio. It was Cameron Brate, Winston DeBrate, and then Ricardo Allen came in with his shoulder. The ball was thrown low, and Brate had to lower his target area. And even though Ricardo Allen came in with his shoulder, he still ended up making contact with the head and still got a 15-yard penalty after a discussion. And what scares me about that is, I thought Ricardo Allen did everything he could have possibly done to do the right thing in that situation. Now what happens if they introduce this targeting rule that you have in college football, and then they go back and look at that, and they still see Ricardo Allen making contact with the helmet when he's trying desperately not to, and he gets thrown out of a football game, a crucial one in December?
Yeah, and you just don't have the players to do it. I think it's already hard enough on these officials. I mean, they completely botched the game with Pittsburgh on the Jesse James touchdown. And you see what happens when Brate saw the hit coming. It's a natural reaction. They cover up. So now he goes from being a 6'5 guy to being a 5'7 guy because he's balling up. He's protecting himself. He's not giving himself up. And that's what happens. They go up for the ball. Here comes a safety, because it's usually the safeties, and all of a sudden the target area is smaller as they protect themselves, and you have the helmet to helmet. It's virtually impossible. They're trying.
Yeah.
But guys getting hurt, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, you've already identified the target, and now you're heading into that contact, and all of a sudden, split second, you've got to alter your target area, and that's just so hard to do. I don't care how athletic you are, and yet they're not accounting for that when they assess these penalties. Let me ask you about the Panthers. You played the majority of your career there with the Carolina Panthers, and I was suggesting to the guys earlier today that stuff – whatever's happening up top, it's usually news of it, rumors of it, whatever you, however you want to characterize it, it trickles down to everyone in that locker room. You hear this, you hear that, you may dismiss it or what have you, but you hear those things. Would you agree with that? Because we've been discussing this Jerry Richardson situation, and maybe you can shed some light on it from your time there.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll say this. I was there for almost 7 years. I did have a good relationship with Big Cat. And I would say that when I read the SI article, first off, I heard was that he was selling the team. And then I was like, what? That's his baby. You know, I know that this guy is, you know, he's fast track trying to win a Super Bowl prior to leaving this earth. That was kind of his thing, especially after the heart transplant, which I was there for that also. I would say this. Everything was news to me except for the sense of how much power he commanded in the room when he walked in, how people treated him throughout the stadium. It was like, you know, it was almost like this sense of like, it's, you know, it's the South, people have a lot of respect, but like literally you felt like you were walking on eggshells. And then I would say to his personality, now knowing, you know, in terms of what people would consider harassment, him and I did have dialogue where we would crack jokes. You know, one time I was missing OTA practice for the calcification of a sesamoid. Sesamoid is like a little bone in your big toe. It's like the size of an M&M. So the calcification that was up against it was like literally you couldn't even find it on the X-ray, but it was like the size of like a little pinhole. And it was painful, so I wasn't practicing. So when he went into the trainer's office, he saw Ryan Vermeer, he saw an x-ray that had my name on it, and it had a little dot circled, and they showed it to me. This is what the problem is. So he comes and he's laughing, and he, you know, in so many words, he called me soft. And then, you know, I immediately went to say that his chicken sucked, Bojangles chicken sucked, and his sweet tea sucked. So we had that kind of conversation. Some people might say, "Oh, well, he offended you," but you know that was our relationship. And for me, trying to get a grasp of what's going on in the situation, saying to myself, "Well, you know, people are going to take things the wrong way," and then you read the story, and you're just floored. You know, the comments of people referring to him as just Mr. You know, what he would do in terms of getting female employees alone and all that. It's just, my jaw literally dropped. And you want to have an opinion one way or the other. But from my perspective with Big Cat, my best memory is I had my first surgery. I tore my Achilles. I was the first case, 7 a.m. I had to get there at 5:30 in the morning. In the hospital, and Big Cat comes slowly into the hospital where I'm waiting to go in, and my mom was there. He asked my mom, could she step aside for a second? She just switched chairs. He sat down. They gave me anesthesia. He was holding my head. I mean, it was a wild moment for me. I never knew that's how he felt about me, but that's the Big Cat that I knew now. Like you said, things trickle down the building. You assume you would know, but you know, we didn't go upstairs unless you were kind of in trouble or something. Guys didn't go upstairs, man. I mean, I would say that. So, you know, when you hear the allegations and the fact that it was multiple times, it's just it crushes you because you have an opinion of somebody and you just never know.
Hey, John, really good stuff there. We appreciate you sharing those stories. Thanks for the time this morning and all the best.
No problem. Have a good one.
Thanks, man.
You too.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.